Broadcasting from the campus of Lynn Benton Community College, we are the Mid-Valley STEM CTE Hub. I'm your host, Casey, and this is Closing the Gap. Hey there, Closing the Gap listeners. Casey here. I wanted to do a little pre-intro. This episode is a little bit different than our typical content. Today I will be talking to the owner of Hinterland Empire, Trinia. Hinterland Empire is a coffee roastery and clothing brand in Northeast Portland. Trinia, like I mentioned, is a small business owner and a professional creative that I had been looking up to for some time. And I think this content is going to be a little bit more candid than you're typically used to, but it will offer really great insights to young people that are looking to become entrepreneurs and people who might not necessarily see themselves as a good corporate fit. But, you know, enough ramble. Let's get the show on the road. So welcome back, listeners. Today on Closing the Gap, we're with Trinia. Is it Trinia like Cher? Like there's just like no last name, or am I just not unaware of it?
There's a last name. It's Cuseo.
Awesome.
Yeah.
I'll ask you later how to spell that for the website.
It's a unique enough first name that I can just keep it at that, too.
Right on.
Yeah.
Cool. And today we're at Hinterland Empire in the dining room and a little bit outside as well. And we're talking about being a small business owner and an independent maker. And we'd love for you to join us on this journey. All right. So you ready to...
Yeah.
So how did Hinterland start? Like, what was, like, the means for getting it going?
The honest answer is a little messy.
Mm-hmm.
Because I was working on a weed farm in Humboldt, and I had a little chunk of money from that. Not enough to do anything profound with, but, like, enough to buy a Craigslist used screen printing setup.
Cool.
And that's what I did, and, yeah. I was like, okay, my ex-wife and I started it together, and at first we were doing everything together, and then we're like, okay, let's divide and conquer so we don't kill each other. So we were doing commercial printing initially.
Interesting.
I was designing logos and websites for people and like anything else, any other designs they had wanted to make, and then we were printing them, and we had a 6-color setup initially. We probably did 3 colors max, though. We tried to keep it really simple because we were using American-made stuff,
mm-hmm.
and we were insistent on that, which was hard for a lot of people. They liked it in theory, but not in the pocketbook. Right. So keeping the colors down for folks helped mitigate that cost.
Mm-hmm.
So we did a lot of simple designs, like strong graphic designs, and then did our own designs and started to sell them on Instagram.
Mm-hmm.
And then that started doing well enough that we didn't need to have these commercial clients. We would do friends, jobs for friends once in a while, but we just decided to focus on our own stuff because it was a lot easier than dealing with people. As most people know, that gets messy.
For sure.
So we had that. We both started with 2 other jobs, too. So, mm-hmm. like, as things got better, we just lost 1 job each and then the next job and then lost the commercial clients and then just started to do the brand.
And cool.
Yeah, the coffee came later, much later.
Right on. Yeah, I kind of remember when you had started testing it and getting it going after you came to Portland.
Yeah.
That's pretty awesome. So it sounds like you were like a graphic designer originally or
no.
like...
So I was an English literature major and a minor in philosophy. I didn't want to be a teacher and I was like in between relationships and it's an interesting time. And I was like, let me just go make some money and hide in the woods.
Cause mm-hmm.
I knew these people from back in the day. And that's what I did. And I was like, I want to do functional art.
Mm-hmm.
I want to make a living, but I want it to be self-contained, you know? Like, I just kind of made a job for myself. Yeah. I did probably take 8 months worth of graphic design, like beginner.
Mm-hmm.
But that was as far as I got. I feel like I'm really lacking in those skills. Like, I can do simple stuff. It takes me longer than it should. I really wish I had time to bolster my education.
I feel like collaboration seems to be a big theme in a lot of the things that you do. It sounds like that's how Interlane got started, and you do a lot of work with like other artists, do your like collaboration calendar. How important do you think collaboration is to having like a creative business and being a creative professional?
I think collaboration, or I would call it diversity, is how like nature works, and I think it's how, if you're being honest about business, that's how it can work ethically.
Mm-hmm.
So every single storefront we've had has been a collaborative storefront with other makers, and because we were there together and sharing expenses and both in it and both working at the same place, you don't have all the bills and all the rent on you. And people might think that you lose control that way, and you do, but I'm an ex-athlete, and I like people, and I like working with people,
mm-hmm.
and I think that that's the good stuff. The fun stuff is, like, actually getting to collaborate. Mm-hmm. I'm not interested in doing things alone. It's lonely.
Yeah.
You know? I'm not, and I don't have the kind of ego that doesn't want to collaborate. I want to share space with like-minded people. We've got this building here. Mm-hmm. We've got a tattoo artist on one side and a plant store on the other. And it's just me in the middle there, but, like, I'm always thinking, like, how could this space be better used? Like, we have a person doing brunch now on Sundays, and and that's been wonderful, and no skin off my ass, and better for them, better for me. Like, they pop up, and they don't have to have this overhead of a store, and I don't have to make food, and it's like they're a queer chef, and it's just been really great. That's what interests me. That's what keeps me, after almost 10 years, it keeps me, I don't know, interested, because the people it's been bringing in to my life.
For sure. I talked to a lot of other people on this show. They talk about networking and building community to be so important, and it seems like that's the entirety of like how you've gotten to where you've been. Is it hasn't been like a path that you forged alone. It's, you know, you went from having your lit degree to being a part of a farm, to being a part of a small business, and growing into a whole strip of like communities and small businesses right in a row.
Mm-hmm.
And it looked like your neighbor and you, like, a doorway in between.
Yeah, if they don't make it to work on time, I can open for them. If I get sick, they can open for people that are picking up orders. I mean, it's not perfect, but it's collaborative, and it's better than nothing.
Yeah.
Strength through diversity, I think.
That's really great. I love the way you're looking at that. I feel like some of the best parts of, like, my job are getting to work with my coworkers.
Yeah, absolutely, in the same way. Especially after the pandemic. I had an ex here helping, and I had my cousin here helping. And I just kind of made jobs for us during that time. And that way we were able to stay safe. And yeah.
Yeah, totally. So how did you come up with the name Hinterland Empire? It's so unique, and it's...
Yeah, It's a word I saw a lot in old English text. It's kind of like a fairy tale word to me.
Mm-hmm.
It's a German word, I think, in origin. And it just means backcountry and, like, unincorporated land, or what's the word? Like boonies, basically. And we started it in Humboldt County, and that was boonies and backcountry. And we lived an hour outside of town down a dirt road. And instead of calling it boonies, it seemed like Hinterland was a sweeter name, and the empire was meant to be ironic. Because it's like one or two people, you know, working at any time.
Right on. I really enjoy that name a lot. I think it's just, it reminds me of like something kind of mystical. So
yeah,
hearing that it comes from something kind of mystical is really fun. I don't know, I just like the idea of like living in a world that's like a little bit magical.
Yeah.
You know, like I'm the type of person that wants Bigfoot to be real. Like, I don't know if I believe in it, but I want him to, you know?
Yeah.
So I just love that.
I get it. I'm the same.
So it sounds like getting to this point was, like, kind of a means to an end. Like, you started a business so you would have, like, an income.
Mm-hmm.
But you also have these really interesting themes and slogans that are, like, not a good corporate fit. Could you kind of expand on, like, how that brand became part of, like, your whole store's identity?
Yeah. I think, I don't, I just draw from life. Like, I've always loved the word feral, and I think it's funny that people have a negative connotation to it, but I don't at all. Just to me, it means wild and, like, untamable, and that's another one of our designs is untamable, and that can't stop printing that. Everyone loves that.
Yeah.
Not a Good Corporate Fit was something I pulled from my mom getting fired when I was in high school from a job, and they told her that. And I remember her being bummed about being fired, but also being like, that's a point of pride. Like, not a good corporate fit. And I can't tell you how many corporate people send me pictures of them with it under their suits, like freaking Superman style. Like,
right on.
They're just so, like, feeling that, you know? It resonates with a lot of people that are anti-capitalists, but here we are trying to just live also. So, just, like, I just draw from life because that's all I have to draw from, really.
Totally.
I make things that I would want to buy, and then it seems to fly. It's always been that way. It's like, this brand will be in existence if people want it to be here. Hey! Sorry, you guys, I didn't hear you come in.
No, you're totally fine.
I'll come help you out. They'll be right back.
Sure.
It seems like you have, like, a little bit of, like, a following on social media. Has it always been something that, like, you put a lot of effort into?
I would say consistently it's been a part of the brand, because the Instagram started, like, when we started.
Right.
It was, like, the days of, like, the filters and stuff, and it was all image-based, and it's how you found other motorcyclists that were women riders. That was really fun to, like, connect in that way. It's morphed a lot. It's still a big part of the brand as far as, like, I would say I don't focus any energy on getting new followers. And in fact, I kind of like try to weed people out.
Sure. Yeah.
Just because people end up on our page and don't know what they're ending up on.
Totally.
So, you know, every once in a while I shake the tree. Just because I don't want people around that are not here for the right reasons or, you know, politically or ethically don't align with me.
Sure, yeah.
So we don't have a huge following. We have almost 16,000 people, but they're mostly all friends, family, or customers, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I remember first finding you when I was getting into the motorcycle scene. I feel like you've always kind of, like, played true to, like, who you are, like, authentically. Do you think that it's, like, important for makers to play into who they are and, like, be authentic? Or do you feel like there's any value in, like,
I think
playing to, like, your audience?
I think there's a couple ways to do it. And I think I just had to use myself and what's going on in a truthful way because that's all I had. I didn't have a marketing budget. I was just like, this is what's happening. I'm going to show it to you. If it's interesting, stick around. If you like the clothes, buy it. If you like the coffee, buy it. I used to talk a lot more about where we source stuff, and I think I need to get back to that because I've just kind of been like, people know. They don't, because there's so many new followers that, like, they don't know. I mean, I think they assume because I'm a small company that prices are a little bit higher because that, but it's because we're U.S. made, we're sustainable, we're fair trade organic, small female-centric farms or direct trade farms. I don't talk that up enough. I just don't have enough time right now, especially because right now I have no employees. So things are super lean, so I don't have a lot of bandwidth for social media. And social media has become a bit of a shit show.
Interesting.
Just because of the ads and the shadow banning and, like, the ethical stuff happening right now that kind of gets in the way of what Instagram used to be, which was just, like, people follow you, they want to see your stuff, and now it's, like, they follow you, you have to pay for them to see your stuff. And that's not something I'm going to do, at least right now.
That seems fair. I feel like social media marketing is kind of this, like, kind of guerrilla, kind of like the what might have once been like punk version of like really advertising yourself, and yeah. It's kind of being taken away.
Well, when Facebook bought it, yeah.
Yeah.
The death rattle for sure.
What do you think is like a good substitute for like that kind of like Facebook taking over everything that was once like free and good for small business advertising?
I think grassroots people talking to people. Mm. So like they come in here, they have a good experience. They're at a bar, the bartender sees their shirt and goes, I love their coffee, I have this shirt on too. Mm-hmm. We're like-minded people, like pretty much like a Venn diagram of a human. Like there's a bunch of weirdos that follow us and they're from all different walks of life. But like the main common denominator is like usually people are very ethical, very free-spirited, very much like live and let live.
Mm-hmm.
And so when you meet somebody with, like, some of our stuff, I've had so many great stories where someone's, like, ran into this person at a concert, saw them wearing your shirt. They're my new best friend. Like, it's the sweetest kind of stories where, like, I'm in Alaska at a freaking, like, bar in the middle of nowhere, and this person's wearing your shirt, and I talked to them, and now we're, like, bonded.
Yeah.
We, like, it's just immediate, like, feeling of, like, okay, you're down. Like, you're good human being, because like you care about sustainability. You're kind of weird because the shit that we put on the shirts is kind of weird, and like you're a free spirit because how you found us has got to be a weird journey, like different walks of life, meeting people, meeting my mom. I can't tell you how many people I meet that are like, I met your mom and she said here's our website, and like it's really cute. Like the way it happens is grassroots, and it's like an organic growth. So it's slow and it's sustainable because the people that come around that it resonates with, they stay.
Mm-hmm. So it sounds, I feel like we brought it back around to community, or you brought it back around to community. Yeah. It's all about like finding those people that you vibe with.
Yeah.
And I think also it kind of sounds like maybe staying authentically true to you is the avenue that maybe makers should go.
Yeah.
The people that need to find you will.
Yeah.
You just have to, like, get out of your studio sometimes and, like, go talk to people.
Yeah, if you can. And if you can't, then, like, do what you're really good at and sell to people that know how to sell.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, our neighbor here, Citrine Bloom, has so many makers in there that maybe aren't great at having a storefront or wouldn't be good at talking to customers, and the retail space in there is perfect because it sells their stuff for them, and they don't have to be the face of anything. Their product can speak for itself, but that's not my model.
Totally. Yeah, you seem to be, like, every day posting something. At least I see, like, almost every day, like,
cool.
You're posting on Instagram about mm-hmm. Something that's, like, really speaking to you. I don't know. I just think that it's
especially because having a public space is really not always advantageous, mm-hmm. especially in these times, especially during the pandemic. A brick and mortar is a huge cost.
Mm-hmm.
And the only reason I do it is for the community building aspect. That's what the coffee was always going to be about. I always pick these places that need to be fixed up too.
Mm-hmm.
So this place was really rough when we got in it. And because of the pandemic, I was able to just kind of put my head down and clean it up and make it nice. But, yeah, not a fancy space, but we made it so much nicer.
Right on.
Yeah.
I think your journey is really interesting because you started off, you know, studying literature, and now you're a small business owner who's making coffee and making shirts. What would you give, like, what kind of advice would you give you to your young self, or, like, a young maker that's kind of trying to find their way?
Well, I always wanted to do graphic design. Mm-hmm. And when I went to college, I was on an athletic scholarship, and I just figured I would get to do the graphic design where I went to school. And then I got there, they were like, joke's on you. There's too many labs. You can't do graphic design. You can do basically English, business, or communications.
Oh, wow.
Because we travel all the time, and if you'll miss labs, you'll fail. So I picked English because that was what I was the strongest at in high school, and I loved to read and write. And I would have probably not played at a high level or at all. Or I would have gone somewhere where they would have let me study what I wanted to study. I probably wouldn't have played sports. It really consumed my life. And I'm like, I can see all the lessons and the goodness in it. So, like, if I was going to talk to my younger self, I would say, don't do that. Don't do, I mean, like, enjoy sports in high school. You learned a lot. Focus on school when you're in school. But yeah. I wasn't a good student, so it wasn't like, it would have probably fallen on deaf ears anyway.
Sure, yeah.
I don't think I would have gone to college. I think I would have gone to either the JC or specific schools that taught just the programs I needed to learn. And maybe business, had I known I was going to start a business.
Right, right.
Maybe some business classes, but no degrees. I'm sorry, like, absolutely not. Like, if we haven't learned that already, that college is kind of a joke, at least if you're not, like, in it for a specific reason and you're passionate about it, which I wasn't, don't do it.
Yeah. It's a huge, huge suck of money. And time.
Or start at a JC. But I had a full ride, so it was like, everyone was like, you should just finish. Like, just do it. Like,
yeah.
Everyone didn't like my creative ideas of, like, they were like, how could you not do this? They're giving you $120,000.
I'm sure people meant well to, like, oh, yeah. In that direction,
yeah.
For sure.
Back then, it was like the death rattle of, like, get a degree, you can do anything.
Yeah.
That ship has sailed.
Yeah, that ship has definitely sailed.
Right then, too. Yeah.
I'm in this weird place in my life where I'm kind of going back into school. Like, I had graduated a few years ago from a community college program where I was, like, studying, like, graphic design mostly.
Nice.
And, like, some media production stuff. And I've been working, and I'm, like, at this place of, like, learn some things, and I went and learned them. And I'm like, I want to learn some more. But I'm like, do I want to go to, like, a university? Because, like, that just feels like, it would be cool to be like, yeah, I have, like, my bachelor's degree. But would that debt feel cool? Or, like, would I actually come out with, like, have learned the things that I wanted to learn? And I feel like that's a big roll of the dice.
Unless you had a job you were gunning for that was like, you need a bachelor's, I wouldn't do it.
Yeah. I think it'd be really cool to make documentaries and be a storyteller. And so
you don't have to do that. My friend, I should hook you up with Jonathan. He just moved here from Humboldt. He's an amazing documentary person. He's doing a documentary about me.
I think he's done a little bit about that on your Instagram.
He's done documentaries, and he works here now. He's moving in with me, actually. He's going to rent one of my rooms at my house.
It's kind of like a perfect situation for a documentary.
I guess. I'm like, turn that thing off. It's been interesting, because I don't think I'm interesting at all, but he finds beauty in the mundane, so... Mission accomplished, I guess.
Well, I think having 16,000 followers says something about, like, what people find interesting, too.
Yeah, I guess.
But, I mean, at least, like, from my point of view, I feel like Inserland Empire has meant, like, it's been a voice for, like, this women's motorcycle community for quite a while now. So, like, the pants, underwear and stuff, it's like a whole vibe. That I think really speaks to a lot of people. So.
Yeah, it's true.
Yeah, I'd be interested to see how it turns out.
Yeah, me too. Me too.
I'm really interested, actually, in hearing about, like, your creative process, how you've kind of developed over time. Like, where do you start and to get to, like, the place you end up?
So things just kind of occur to me, like, funny things. I used to be a lot funnier. And then I just write them down, and then when I get a little window of time, I start, like, a storyboard in my notes, basically. And if I'm seeing a design that's too complex, I'll outsource it to one of my tattoo artist friends or my woodblock friends, lino cut friends, and they'll do it. But if I have the bandwidth, I do a lot of our text heavy designs that are real simple, like the banana slug cowgirls, mine. the feral fuck, the raccoon, the boxer, like really simple stuff. But like the cool little possum guy is a local tattoo artist here, Dan Zippy, who's one of my favorites. And then I have two friends in Humboldt, Naomi and Harmony, and they have been friends since the very beginning. They've done a lot of different designs for us. But I just love paying people that are community members and are doing rad shit. It's like the coolest part of my job is paying artists, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But I also would love to have the skill set to do more of our stuff and to, like, not have such a simple, limited design, like, to pull from. Like, I wish I had more skills on the computer. Like, I do a lot of, like, sketching, bringing it into the computer, moving stuff around, printing it out, sketching. Mm-hmm. But, like, I know there's programs that are, like, I even have them, but I just, like, haven't taken the time. I limp along.
Sure, yeah.
That's why I outsource about half of our designs. And it doesn't feel bad to outsource them because I'm paying artist friends and people who, like, get the vibe.
Mm-hmm.
I've had nothing but a good experience with that.
Right on.
Some people will be like, I want to do something for you guys. And we just start talking. Like, the prayer hand one, the tattoo artist hands.
Mm-hmm.
With the,
the monkey.
Yeah, the different tools in there. Like an Australian artist just sent that with something that I paid for, like as a bonus.
Cool.
And then I added all the text to it, and it's just, yeah, I love that part of it, and I love hyping up artists and the people I work for. It's so much easier for me to sell things when it's collaborative.
Totally, 100%. I definitely can identify with that. Like,
yeah.
I know that I have, like, some skills, but, like, to tell people that I have these skills, like, I wouldn't even know where to begin.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Get that.
So how do you, like, allocate your time as a small business owner and a maker? Like, what does a day look like? Like, if someone was asking you, like, how should I, I'm starting my own business, I'm trying to figure out how to, like, deal with my, like, how to set up my day, what would you tell them?
I would say, do as I say, not as I do.
Right. Like,
most small business owners just work too much. And I'm no exception to that. I would say, make sure you take your days off.
Mm-hmm.
'Cause the days on are going to be full on. And what I'm currently working on, and my friend Jonathan is helping me understand the idea behind, is like really concentrated blocks of work.
Mm-hmm.
And then actually taking time off.
Yeah.
What ends up happening, I think, with a lot of small businesses is you work all the time and then you work all the time. So what ends up happening is, okay, so you work all the time instead of working really hard when you're working.
Mm-hmm.
And then actually having time off. It just blurs and bleeds into your real life. So, like, today I end at 3. I'm not even supposed to be open today.
Yeah.
But because we did the strike on Monday, I was like, I have to make up for it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's holidays, so I need to ship. So after, I'm going to pick up embroidered hats my friends do in their garage.
Mm-hmm.
With our Hinterland logo on it. And then I'm going to help a friend move. And then I'm going to go do some other work. And it's just, it just bleeds right into my out of work life.
Mm-hmm.
And some days that's okay. But to really keep turning back to that model of concentrated work blocks, where that's really all you do. It's really hard to do for me now that we're open to the public, because I'll be in the back designing, shipping, doing inventory, and then someone will come in and I'll have to, like, shift gears and do coffee, or we have a brunch here and then I'm here not able to do any of the other stuff, just drinks, and a lot of, like, interpersonal FaceTime retail, which is a good problem. But what I'm realizing is delegation is really important, and that once I get another employee again, which I really need to do, that I will be better off doing back house stuff while they're doing coffee type stuff.
Interesting.
Right now I'm doing everything because I'm trying to keep it lean, because that's what the times are calling for.
Yeah.
A lot of my fellow small businesses are going either completely not public, back online, moving into, like, actually physically leaving urban areas and moving to cheaper places and going all online, which is a smart thing to do if you can. But the point is to create community. And Portland is a great place for hinterland to have community. This has always been where we've had the most customers.
Yeah, Pacific Northwest is like, I think, definitely the vibe for sure.
Yeah, and I've just like fallen in love with the building and the neighborhood. And at this point, I'm just going to try and bloom where I'm planted.
So I had to let Trinia get back to work, but I wanted to thank her for a time. Thank you, Trinia. This is a great opportunity to see how someone can forge their own path, and an even better opportunity to see how you can build a career that aligns with your values. So, as always, until next time, keep progressing.